We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We have here on the program this morning a physician to do a health topic, and it's something that we do at least try to do at least a couple times a year on the program. We'll be talking about skin and skin care, and since this is summer, we'll be talking about sun exposure. We'll be talking about sunscreens, things like that. But, of course, other questions about skin are welcome, and I know that the guest will do her best to give you an answer. Our guest is Dr. Elizabeth Small. She is a dermatologist at Carl in Urbana, and we're pleased to have her here for the first time. It's a topic that we've done before, but she has not been with us before, and I appreciate it very much you being here. All right. And I also like to caution people when we do these kinds of medical programs, I say this every time because we have many physicians on the program, just to remind people that we cannot do diagnosis over the phone because the doctor cannot see you. We do these shows to try to add to your health knowledge, and I know she'll do her best to answer questions. But, of course, if you have a particular concern that requires a doctor seeing you, you'll want to pursue that with your own physician or with somebody who can see what the problem is. But, you know, having put that little bit of a limitation on it, I say that always at the beginning of the program. I don't want to discourage people from calling, but I want them to understand what we can do and what we can't. Now, having said all that, the number, 333-9455, that's for Champaign-Urbana, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And you may also email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, again, very glad to have you here. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Just recently, it seems that there has been quite a bit of reporting about sunscreens and about people's confusion. How do you pick out a good one? And perhaps also about the number that's attached to that, the SPF number, and what that number means, and whether, in fact, a higher number past a certain point, whether a higher number really means anything. So when people go down to the store and they're looking for sunscreen, what should they think about?
First, how long will they be in the sun? What type of activities are they doing and what their skin type is? And by that, I mean we divide skin types into six categories. Number one would be a person who never, ever tans and always burns. And number six would be a deeply pigmented person who is insensitive to the sun. What I ask my patients to use is a broad-spectrum sunscreen, and specifically that means it covers both UVA and UVB. Now, for many, many years, the sunscreens available in the United States have been very effective against the burning rays of the sun, which are UVB. And most people can recognize these because when they go in the sun, they can feel their skin burning. UVB rays are present in the highest concentrations from April to October, and they do not pass through window glass. They are carcinogenic. Most of the sunscreen ingredients in the sunscreens we have now are very effective against UVB. As a minimum, one needs to use an SPF 30. In the past, they have said SPF 15. SPF 15 is effective against 93% of the UV rays. Adding a 30 bounces it up to 97%. After that, the curve is rather flat. In other words, from 30 to 50 to 75, you're really not gaining very much. Mm-hmm. And probably the most important point to make for patients is the amount of sunscreen they apply. One application is a shot glass of sunscreen. If you are spending the entire day at the beach, you will literally use half a bottle of sunscreen. Studies have shown that people put on anywhere from 1/4 to 1/2 the correct amount of sunscreen, albeit the number is reduced by that amount. So the higher the number, if you're not adequately putting on sunscreen, we have a fighting chance that you're getting enough on your skin. Now, and getting back to the ultraviolet A rays, UVA rays are what is present in most tanning beds, and it's present year-round. 365 days a year, UVA is here. It passes through window glass. It is primarily responsible for what we call aging, which in essence is sun damage. It causes irregular pigmentation, it causes wrinkling, it causes lack of elastic tissue, and because the UVA passes deep into your dermis, it affects your immune system. It damages your lymphocytes and is carcinogenic along with the UVB. Now, the best sunscreen ingredients to use for UVA are the old-fashioned zinc oxide, titanium dioxide, avobenzone, which is present as an ingredient called Helioplex in Neutrogena sunscreens. And Neutrogena got around the avobenzone problem by putting a photo stabilizer on it so that it's stable in the sunlight. So that way the avobenzone is effective against all UVA. There is another ingredient called Mexoryl or Camisole, which is available in Europe. Unfortunately, the FDA regulates sunscreens in this country, and they have been very, very slow to allow sunscreens in Europe, which have been shown for years to be very effective against ultraviolet A, from coming into this country. Mm-hmm. Now, Mexoryl is present in some La Roche-Posay products that you can get at CVS. But important take-home message is SPF 30, coverage for both UVB, UVA, apply at least 30 minutes before you go in the sun, reapply every 90 minutes if you're in and out of the water, if you're perspiring profusely. Wear a wide-brimmed hat. Try to avoid the sun between 10 and 4. And always wear sunglasses to prevent the possibility of cataract formation.
Yeah. Okay. So, and should on the label on the product, should it say clearly that it works for both UVA and B? So that you read the label, it'll say that.
Yes.
Then I've read some things, though, that suggest that there is still some issue about does the SPF only refer to the B rating? Because I've seen some things that said, you know, you might go out and you buy something that says, okay, it says it's 30, and you think, okay, good. And it says on there it protects against both B and A. Well, on some of those products that it may do a real good job with the B, but not that good with the A.
Exactly. The American Academy of Dermatology has been waiting for 5-plus years for the government to establish new sun protection factor numbers. We do not have a rating system for A. SPF is only for B.
Okay. So there then, what it sounds like what you can do is look at what's in the product and look for particular kinds of ingredients that work on A.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Because I have a handout in my office that, you know, clearly delineates to the patient. It's oftentimes not the number, but it's the ingredient that's so critical.
Okay. Questions on that? Other things are welcome. We have a caller here who's ready to go and waiting. Our guest is Dr. Elizabeth Small. She is a dermatologist, so I mean she's a doctor who specializes in the skin. She works at Carl in Urbana, and I know that she'll do her best to take your skincare questions. So all you got to do is give us a call. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's a caller in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
I'm a pharmacist at CVS, and I have a lot of people come in and ask me questions. A couple of the questions that I wanted to ask the doctor was, I had a patient come in yesterday asking for eczema for their, for their kid. So I was wondering what I should recommend for pediatric patients and also adult patients for eczema. That's one of the questions. I have like three questions.
Okay. Well, I guess we take them one at a time. You want to take that?
Okay. For sensitive skin patients, Neutrogena has a sensitive skin sunscreen that just has zinc oxide in it. There's some other brands. Vanny Cream is one, and a Solbar Shield. These all have the inert ingredients in it, like zinc oxide and titanium, and they tend to be more hypoallergenic.
And that's for eczema, you said, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you said Solbar, S-O-B-A-R, doctor?
S-O-L-B-A-R, Solbar Shield.
Okay. Okay, and that's also going to be used for, like, for kids too, right?
Yes.
And what was the second product, ma'am? I'm sorry.
Neutrogena Sensitive Skin.
Okay. All right. Okay, and that's what I came on. The second thing, I had one patient come in and show me their hands. They were kind of cracked, and they were kind of black. The hands were, like, black and, cracked. And they were asking me what I can recommend. Can you tell me? I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
Well, I'm at a disadvantage without seeing the hands. I can only guess. I mean, is this an older person that's got coagulation problems?
No. It's a very young patient who came in. Very young person. It was like, you could see, the blackness on their hand, and they were cracked, and, they were really hurting them. And I'm like, I don't know. So I'm not a dermatologist, so.
I don't think I can comment on that.
No problem. For poison ivy, I've been recommending Ivy Dry.
Yes, good.
And Rule Gel. I don't usually recommend calamine lotion because it's really not helpful and it usually cracks up, And so would you say that, is there any other product that I should recommend besides Rule Gel and Ivy Dry?
Just like baking soda baths or Aveeno oatmeal baths to cool it off and make sure they wash off the poison ivy sap as soon as they possibly can.
Okay.
And over-the-counter hydrocortisone creams and lotions are good, too.
Okay. All right, doctor. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We'll go on to another caller here. This is someone in Champaign. Also, line number two. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Sorry. I'm actually in Urbana.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
Okay. So I have two questions. First of all, I just thought of listening to him and your response. Our family has a kind of mini argument going because we all get really bad poison ivy every year. And my sister is at a camp, and she was told that if you get the oils off your poison ivy, it's actually no longer contagious, even if the blister bursts. Is that true?
Is the question? I think maybe the doctor's really not clear on the question. So what you're saying is that as long as you wash the oil that has the poison, the resin, as long as you get that off your skin, you're saying somebody in your family says then it won't spread, and then somebody else is saying but it actually still can spread, those little blisters and stuff that comes out of those blisters. That's still
contagious.
That's still contagious.
No, the fluid in the blisters is not contagious.
Okay.
You're correct, and it's the resin of the sap of the poison ivy. That's what you have to get off your skin immediately.
Okay, and then my second question was, I have extremely sensitive skin. I'm one of those people, I either tan or I burn, but it's hard to wear sunscreen because my skin's so sensitive. However, I also wear hijab, which is a Muslim headscarf, so I'm generally, all of my body is covered with clothing except for my hands and my face. Should I still be concerned in, like, the summer months of having something underneath my clothing since it's sometimes kind of thin?
There's a product that is manufactured by RIT, R-I-T, RIT Dye.
Mm-hmm.
It's called SunGuard.
Mm-hmm.
We sell it out at Urbana, and mm-hmm. you put your clothing in the washing machine. You add the powder, and it puts SPF 30 into your clothing.
Really?
Yeah. And it's very economical. It's very economical. They used to sell it at
Hot.
No, this is for your clothes. So your clothes.
I know, but when my clothing is on my skin, because I have really sensitive skin, I found.
I have not had anybody. I mean, that's obviously with your sensitive skin, that's always an issue. You might want to just try one garment first. But I've not had anybody call back complaining about it.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. So that's there is clothing that you can buy that already has that in there.
very expensive clothing.
But this is a way, it sounds like it's a much more cost-effective way if that's what you want to do. Because I think that people think that that may be thinking that the clothes that they wear will be blocking these rays. And while they maybe provide a little bit of protection, mm-hmm. better than your bare skin, it's in some cases, say if you were just wearing a plain cotton T-shirt, that really doesn't block very much of those rays.
No. Clothing is no more than a 7. And there are many people that work outdoors all day that because that's their job, and they have to wear a shirt, and they'll just be tan, completely tan underneath. Mm-hmm. So why this product is, it's good for like 20 washes. So once it's in, it's pretty good, especially for kids that are at the swimming pool, because I think it's very important that if the children are going to be swimming from 10 to 12 or 10 to 2, and they're outdoors that whole time period, they should be wearing a T-shirt over their back so they don't get their back exposed.
Mm-hmm. And is this a product? Now, you say that you sell it, but is this a product that you should be able to go into department store or, you know, most places like that and buy?
I was just going to tell you that it used to be available at Hobby Lobby. And we always told our patients that, you know, you don't have to buy it here. You can go to Hobby Lobby and get it if you want. You can go online to the RIT Dye website and see if you can order it there. So it's just a matter of, you know, it's not like we have an exclusive franchise or anything. We just make it available to our patients at cost. But if you want to order it online, that's fine. I am just not aware of any place else in town that has it.
Okay.
Yes, I'll have to look at.
Okay. Well, we'll go on and we'll take some other callers. And we're getting close to our midpoint here. Well, maybe not all that close. I'll just, though, introduce again our guest, Dr. Elizabeth Small. She's the dermatologist at Carl and Urbana, and we're talking about skin care. So 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Next caller is in Urbana, line 3. Hello?
Hi.
Yes.
Okay. So in October, I got my blood drawn from my right arm, and ever since then, I've had, like, a tiny little bump scar. Like, I scar really easily, so it's, you know, nothing too worrisome. But, like, 2 days ago, this bump scar started, like, turning into what looked like a bug bite and was, like, really sore. And I guess that's really all the information. It's a little bit better today, but it was, like, it was pretty painful and odd. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Well, what do you think?
I'm sorry?
I think the doctor is sort of puzzling over what to say.
Right. Dermatology is so visual that, you know, we really have to see a lot of things to know what we're working with.
It was just like a little tiny bump scar, and then that swelled up, and the skin underneath it swelled up too, not just the scar itself, because the scar is tiny, but and then there was like a patch of red skin around it.
Okay, was it?
So it was definitely like irritated in some way.
Was it painful or itchy?
Painful.
Okay, well, it definitely sounds like it was irritated. Did you have fever? Did you have red streaks growing up your arm? Did it look like you had any systemic symptoms of?
I just thought it was odd because I got my blood drawn like 8 months ago.
Right. It sounds that at some point the bump, for whatever reason, got irritated and became inflamed. And I would just try, provided you know you're not pregnant, take ibuprofen or Aleve just for the anti-inflammatory effect.
Okay.
That should calm it down. And obviously, if it persists in having this pattern, then you may very well want to have it looked at and possibly even have it biopsied.
Biopsied, whoa. Okay, cool. Okay. Thanks, Elizabeth.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you. And again, to another caller here, this is line number 1, and it is Champagne. Hello.
Hi, am I one?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I've got a follow-up question on the sunscreen discussion that was earlier. For a general purchase of sunscreen when you don't have a list of the effective UVA blockers, if the sunscreen product says it does UVB to whatever SPF value, 30 or so, and it also mentions UVA, I guess it's just kind of a crapshoot whether it's got barely enough UVA blocker in it to do any good at all or whether it's got adequate amounts. Is there any general guideline other than having a list of the active UVA effective blockers that you carry with you?
Well, because the Neutrogena sunscreens are so widely available, and most of the Neutrogena sunscreens, the Ultra Sheer and the sprays, and they all have the Helioplex in it, and that essentially covers the entire range of UVA. Plus, they have, they block it. So
just kind of look for that brand.
Yes, I'm sure that it's, pretty much inevitable that Walgreens or CVS or somebody's going to have a knockoff on it too. So if you just try to look for that, well, they have the patent on the Helioplex, so it'll probably just be Neutrogena. But anything with zinc oxide or titanium in it also is good.
Those are the white ones, right?
Right. They've micro-sized them so that they're not as white as they were, back in the 70s when the lifeguards had those white smears on their face.
Right. That's what I'm thinking of.
But they go on much better now. They still, you have to smooth them out pretty good. It might be a little bit white, but they're a complete physical barrier to your skin, not a chemical barrier, which is what's so effective against them.
Is a rating system in progress, or is it just nebulous sometime in the future?
Oh, they've been, periodically on my AAD newsletter every day, they'll say the government, they were supposed to come out with it last year, they were supposed to come out with it in 08, who knows?
Well, any day now, then.
Right, yeah. Okay. You know how the government is.
Right. All right, well, thank you very much.
All right,
okay.
Thank you. On to another caller. This is someone in Atlanta, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question is about the UV protective garments.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And I purchased them, and I wondered how effective they are.
Well, the ones that you purchased,
mm-hmm.
What company were they from?
Patagonia.
I'm sure they're fine.
I thought so.
I mean, because they know they're quite expensive,
mm-hmm.
and they have the special fabrics in there, and that's a reputable company. I know I would trust it.
Do I need to wear sunscreen under it also?
Well, again, it depends what you're doing.
Okay.
If you're going to be out, if you're at the equator and you're going to be outside in the middle of the day, then definitely you need to use sunscreen underneath it.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to know, and I appreciate it very much.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So these garments that you would buy that have the sun protection in them when you get them, is it something about the fabric itself, or is it something that it's treated with?
I think it's both.
Okay.
I know it's a special fabric that's woven tightly to resist the ultraviolet rays.
Hmm.
And I can't be positive whether they put some chemical in it, but they are tested in the laboratories and have background data to support their claims on it.
Okay.
And there are several companies that you can just Google sun protection clothing and go online and look it up.
I know that some people feel that, going back to sunscreen here, that particularly for getting it on their kids, that they find that those that spray on, it's one of the easier ways to get it on them. They'll maybe tolerate that a little bit better. But having said that, and going back to the things that you said about how probably most people don't put on enough,
mm-hmm.
what do you think about spray-on sunscreens?
Spray-ons do not have as much substantivity as a cream or a lotion. By that I mean they don't stick to the skin as long. But I think in the overall scheme of things, the most important thing, since we're all human, if my patient is at least making the effort to put a spray on, I'm going to congratulate them for trying to use sunscreen. And hopefully they'll just, if you have a spray, you're more likely to just keep spraying and spraying and spraying.
Yeah.
It's a little bit easier than to lug the bottle out of the beach bag and put it on. So creams and lotions are better, but if they're using their spray, that's fine. I think Neutrogena has one that's, 100 or something, and they keep coming out with higher numbers all the time. And eventually, when they come out with this new rating system, they're not going to go above 30. They're going to cap that.
And for children, there are concerns about children, really, really little kids, like baby kids,
mm-hmm.
The possibility that they might absorb too much of this stuff through their skin. So is there some sort of age at which you would say children younger than X, you know, whatever it was, that you would say you shouldn't put sunscreen on them at all?
Definitely 6 months.
Okay.
But even a child that is, you know, under a year old, I would be very hesitant to take them to the beach without basically tons and tons of protection, because their skin is just so vulnerable to it. Mm-hmm. And they do have, like, baby sunscreens. And there's another the Skin Cancer Foundation has their seal of approval, which also is on some of those baby sunscreens. But they should be covered up with clothes and hats.
So, yeah, for little kids, probably the best thing you could do is just make sure that they just keep them out of the sun. If they're going to be outside, you got to keep them well shaded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. I have an email here from someone who writes that her husband is an avid golfer. He's in his late 50s. He is redheaded and light-skinned. He's had both squamous and basal skin cells removed from his forehead and has been prescribed the topical treatment for cancer cells, but has not had cancer cells anywhere else. He does wear a wide-brim hat when he plays golf. He applies a 70 SPF sunscreen before he goes out. Sometimes, though, she says he comes home with a very red forehead. Is there anything else that he could do to avoid further damage?
Try to golf early in the morning before 10 or late in the afternoon. Reapply the sunscreen as often as indicated, depending on the temperature, the humidity, how much he perspires. I would, you know, try to his shirts, at least. He may want to try to get some protective shirts or use the SunGuard product. That's about all I can say.
That's about it. So avoid the times when the rays are the most intense. So that's that middle of the day period, mm-hmm. that we always say, you know, if you can do something else, if you can be inside that time of the day, and then make sure you use good sunscreen and you apply it frequently. And if you're going to be outside, you can use the protective clothing and mm-hmm. And definitely wear that hat that helps protect that, like the back of your neck and in your face. And it sounds like that's probably about, if you're going to be outside, that's probably about as much as you can do.
That's basically about as much as you can do.
All right. What I want to do is get on to talking a little bit about what people should look for in, mm-hmm. in terms of potential problem. But I tell you what, I have another caller, so we'll get to them right now. Someone who is in Rantoul. This is line one. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
I am allergic to sunscreen, many, many, many kinds of sunscreen. It is an allergy that only happens on my hands, and now I've found my toes. And the reaction, I've had a doctor give it a name, which I never can remember, but it starts with this, and it has the word hydro in it, and it's blisters. I get blisters on my fingers and the webs of my fingers and my knuckles after I apply sunscreen. Now, where I put the sunscreen on my arms and legs and face, I don't get this. I just spit on my hands after I apply sunscreen, unless I wash really, really well with soapy water after I apply it. I wish I knew which ingredient was causing this. Any clues?
Well, it could be a fragrance in the sunscreen. It could be a preservative. Potentially, it could be one of the actual sunscreen chemicals.
Yeah.
If it's on your hands, I'm not sure what activity you're doing. If you're in the garden, I would just try to wear gloves rather than put the sunscreen on your hands. Obviously, if you're at the beach, that's not going to be a problem.
I put latex gloves on my hands in order to apply the sunscreen. You know, whether I'm applying it to me or to my kids or whatever, applying the sunscreen is what makes my hands blister.
Mm-hmm. You might want to try the Vanny Cream sunscreen, SPF 60, because it only has... The only active ingredients in it are zinc oxide and titanium, and to the best of my knowledge, people can't get allergic to those because they're inert.
Tell me the name of it again. Vanny, V-A-N-N-I?
V-A-N-I, C-R-E-M-E.
I'm sorry, it starts with a V as
V as in Victor.
All right.
Yeah.
And you can just Google that, and there's numerous drug stores that just cater to dermatology products, that you can find that.
All right. Well, I'll give that a shot. Now, with all the zinc, does that mean it's very white?
It is white. Mm-hmm.
So will I have it white everywhere I have the sunscreen, or will I be able to rub it in?
You could rub it in pretty good.
All right.
Yeah. Eventually it'll fade in.
All right. Thank you very much. Right. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
We are a little bit past our midpoint here. We're talking this morning about skin care, and our guest is Dr. Elizabeth Small. She's a dermatologist at Carl in Urbana. And if you have questions, we've been talking a lot about sunscreen because it's summer. But if you have other kinds of skin questions, you can call us, and she'll do her best to give you an answer. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222. 9455, and you may also email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. We've been talking here a lot about sunscreen, and I think that people understand that what we're concerned about is potential damage to the skin. Not only will it maybe make you look old, but we also have concerns about cancer, about skin cancer. So when people are looking, they're looking at their arms, their hands, their face, and of course, then there are parts that are kind of harder to look at, like the back of your neck and stuff. What is it that people should be looking for that they would be concerned about? And then maybe you might want to have a doctor look at.
Well, the most common precancerous lesion is an actinic keratosis. And it's seen very commonly on the tops of the hands, extensor forearms, nose, face, especially in men. Tops of the ears, back of the ears. These lesions start out like little pink, scaly, crusty areas. And the hallmark is they don't go away. They'll persist. You can flake the top off, but they'll always come back. And if something lasts 6 months or more, then it would need to be evaluated, especially if it's in a sun-exposed area of the body. And especially if it occurs on sun-damaged skin. And by that, I mean someone who has a lot of freckles on their skin, liver spots, photo aging from the sun. The most common kind of skin cancer is a basal cell carcinoma, and over 2.8 million of those are found every year. They are often first described as a little pimple that won't heal, and the patient will just obviously try to pick the pimple off, and then it just keeps coming back. It doesn't go away. Commonly, people come to my office and say, every time I wash my face, this lesion bleeds. Will you look at it? It has many different forms and shapes and colors, but that's the classic appearance of a basal cell. And it's very easily treated. If it's not treated, it can grow. And it can be locally aggressive, especially to the ears and nose. Third most common kind is squamous cell carcinoma, and there'll be 800,000 of those this year. Those are seen most commonly in patients who've had chronic sun exposure, construction workers, sailors, farmers, people who spend a lot of time in the sun. We see a huge increase in incidence of squamous cells in organ transplant patients. Kidneys, livers, hearts, and those patients are very difficult to treat because of the drugs they're taking. And the squamous cell carcinoma is a nodule oftentimes that has a central plug to it, or it's usually hard, firm, red, and crusty. Sort of looks like a big actinic keratosis. And actinic keratoses can evolve into the squamous cell carcinoma. Now, the fourth growth and the one that people are most concerned about, of course, is melanoma. And we have seen a huge increase in melanoma in the past 50 years. It's actually become epidemic. Just this year, by 1 in 50 people will end up with melanoma. And one person dies of melanoma every hour. Melanoma starts as a flat, variably pigmented lesion. The hallmarks that you look for are A, B, C, D, E, which is asymmetry, border, color, diameter, and evolution. You can go to several different websites. American Academy of Dermatology and the Skin Cancer Foundation are both well-vetted websites that have wonderful pictures of moles that can help guide you into determining if it needs to be evaluated. But in essence, any adult, like over 30, 35, who all of a sudden develops a new mole that's changing in color, is pink, blue, gray, black, brown, jagged borders, notched edges, it needs to be evaluated. So those are the most common ones.
Okay. I again have another email here from someone who was listening to the sunscreen discussion, and again is and it can be pretty confusing here because we've talked about all the, these various ingredients. But he was wondering, first of all, just to make sure that the Neutrogena products that you were talking about, is it Helioplex? That they say Helioplex is the thing that's in there, and this is a protectant for the UVA.
Correct.
And you think that's a good mm-hmm. way to go. Okay. He says he bought a sunscreen last year that advertises, quote, with Dermaplex technology, and he said the active ingredients are octacycline, oxybenzone, and avobenzone, and was kind of wondering, is that the same thing or is that something different?
Octisalicylate and oxybenzone are ingredients or chemicals, they're good for the shortwave UVA. Avobenzone equals Helioplex.
Okay, so that's the same. So that sounds like that's
that would be a complete UVA block.
Should
right.
be okay. So that's he says he's thinking that maybe this is, if it says it has Dermaplex technology, that's maybe some kind of a trade name.
Yeah.
But it should be that if it has all three of those things in there, that should be a good broad spectrum protection against the UVA.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that sounds like that's pretty good. All right. Hope that helps. And we have some other callers here on the phone, and we'll go to Bloomington next, Bloomington, Illinois. Line one. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Yes.
I am just past 50 years old, and I've noticed the last couple of summers, my cheeks, I get kind of a light brown area. I don't like tan evenly. And I've been using a SPF 70 on my face when I go out. And I'm wondering, is the sunscreen just not doing enough to protect me? Or is there something else that I need to be doing? I usually wear a wide-brimmed hat when I'm out gardening.
Obviously, without seeing you in person, I'll guess at the diagnosis. Are you taking hormone replacement therapy?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, what you're experiencing is pigmentation that may be genetic, but I think there's also a component here of the estrogen, and the hormone replacement therapy is making you more susceptible to developing facial pigmentation, just like the mask of pregnancy that many women get. And the key message here is that you can do all the protecting you want when you go outdoors, but it's the sunscreen that's coming in through your window glass when you're driving to work or driving to stores or sitting in the living room or sitting in the office that you have to use a full block UVA sunscreen 24/7 all year round.
Aha.
Indoors, okay. Outdoors, rain, shine, does not matter. You can protect yourself all you want against the burning rays, but if the UVA rays are coming in, that is going to stimulate the pigmentation cells in those areas, and you'll get the blotches.
Okay, and so if I went to a dermatologist, would there be any lightening treatment that they would do, or they would just say, start with what you just said, and eventually it'll lighten up?
No, there's bleaching creams that we can prescribe. And you can combine those with Retin A. And during the wintertime, they're fairly effective. I don't usually encourage people in the summer. I think it's really, really hard to do in the summer, and it's just too much to think about. So in the wintertime, when you're less outside, it's easier to see the dramatic difference that can occur with the bleaching creams.
Wonderful. Oh, thank you very much. It's been very helpful.
All right.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. And maybe just one other thing that's probably worth mentioning, that there are, I'm sure that there are some number of medications that people might be taking, prescription medications, that would make them make their skin more sun sensitive. And now, should that, though, when people go to get their prescriptions, they should get a sheet of paper that lists, that says how to take it and what the potential side effects are and all this kind of stuff that you hope people actually will read. If increased sun sensitivity is possible, it should say that on there, right?
Yes.
Okay. Are there anything in particular that you'd say not only cause that problem, but lots and lots of people use?
Oh, yes. Sulfa antibiotics. Which is very interesting because they give them to people many times when they go to Mexico for turista. And here they are on the beach at Cancun, and they're taking a really very potent photosensitizer. All the tetracyclines. Diuretics, water pills that many, many older people are on. The ACE inhibitors. Those are the most common ones that come to – certainly the birth control pills can cause photosensitivity because of the pigmentation. And some older medications like amitriptyline and nortriptyline could cause a different kind of pigmentation.
Okay.
But usually it's the antibiotics that we think about and the diuretics.
Okay. So it definitely, if you get a prescription and they hand you a piece of paper that has information about the medicine, it'd be a good idea to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And would that be one of those things where they would put a little sticker on the bottle that would say that it will increase your sun sensitivity or not?
I don't know. I would assume so. I know they always talk about the gastrointestinal, like when to take it with meals.
Right.
But I think on the antibiotics for the acne, I think they put that sun thing on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's all. It's always – and again, if you have any questions, when you get your prescription, ask the pharmacist.
Right.
They should be able to tell you. Okay. Our guest in this hour of focus is Dr. Elizabeth Small. She's a dermatologist from Carl in Urbana, and we'll be here for about another, 6, 7, 8 minutes taking skin care questions. We'll do our best to help you out and take as many as we can. The next person in line here is in Lamont, Illinois, and that's line 4. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The powder that I think you said was made by RIT, available from the Hobby Lobby. Could you name that again, please?
SunGuard.
SunGuard.
Uh-huh.
And it's a powder, and you add it to the washing machine and wash the clothes with it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then poison ivy. I heard of other people who have had poison ivy use a special soap from the pharmacy that alleviates all the problems if they do it soon after contacting the poison ivy resin. Do you have a name for that soap, perhaps?
I have heard my patients mention it, but right off the top of my head, I can't remember what it was.
Okay. That's
the best thing to ask the pharmacist, and it might be in the same section of the drugstore where they have the Ivy Dry and the Ruli Gel and those products.
Okay.
But there is a product called Ivy Block.
Uh-huh.
And firefighters use it and utility guys use it. And it acts as it's sort of a sunscreen for poison ivy.
Oh,
it blocks the resin from getting on your skin.
And it's called Ivy Block.
Yes.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Thanks. So if you know that you're going to be in a place where there's poison ivy, you can put this stuff on beforehand, and that should help keep the stuff off. Yeah, if all goes the way you would like, it should help keep that stuff off. And then if you know that you've come in contact with poison ivy, then as soon as you possibly can, what you want to do is wash that area and then try to get that resin as much as you can get that off. And if all you've got is just soap, well, just use that.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like, again, maybe if you say you're going to go camping and you know that there might be that possibility, maybe you might want to have some of this stuff
mm-hmm.
with you. So if it happens, then you can try and get on it right away.
Yeah.
Because it is the case that it's the, just to follow up on what someone asked earlier, it's that resin that's the problem. So if you get it on one spot and then you rub that and then you rub that somewhere else, you're going to transfer the skin reaction from the one place to the other
mm-hmm.
place.
It's the urushiol resin. And all you have to do is break any part of the poison ivy plant and that sap comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're sensitized to it, it's immediate. I mean, it takes less than 5 minutes to bind to your skin. So until you can get washed off that quick, and it all depends on how much gets on your skin, how long it's on the skin, what part of your skin. Certainly the face is going to swell up really bad, and then your innate allergy.
Right.
Yeah, they used to have a vaccine for poison ivy, but they took it off the market.
Hmm.
And it seemed to work. I mean, when we used it, patients would swear by it.
Okay, well, back to the phones. Let's see. Next, we'll talk with somebody in Indiana, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
A couple of quick things. What I want you to say, something's about skin tags. But a couple of folklore things. When I was a young old boy, I used to be told that if you ate the poison ivy plant, you'd never have to worry about getting poison ivy again. Unfortunately, a little boy did that, and we almost lost him. But, and, you know, I don't know how that. Yeah, I just wonder if they still have kind of crazy things now talking about stuff. But skin tags, I've tried to get my doctor to talk about them, and he said, don't worry about them. And I guess I don't worry about them, but I sure wonder what's going on with them and why they grow. Or is it an anomaly, or is it something that happens to certain people, or what exactly? Thanks a lot.
Okay. Yeah, you want to talk about skin tags?
Well, skin tags usually occur in areas of friction, like around the neck and the armpits and the groin. Seems to be somewhat genetic. I don't think they've ever actually found a genetic marker. Certain people get them. Other people don't get them. If they're tiny little lesions, you can just take a little scissors and snip them off. Certainly, if they're large, and especially if they're irritated, you definitely want to have your doctor remove them because of bleeding and stuff. But they are just an aggravation.
And so that's not a cancer. It's not an indication that you're going to get cancer. It's not so people don't have to worry about that.
Right.
But the problem is that depending on where they are, they can get irritated, and if you disturb it to the point where it bleeds, well, that's kind of a nuisance. Is there any sort of over the counter thing that you can do for that, or is it literally do you physically have to remove it?
Physically, you have to remove them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in the office, all we do is just snip them off.
All right. Well, hope that helps. Line three is next. Someone in Urbana. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I know a fairly newborn infant who has port wine stain, and I understand that there is a problem that I hope I have pronounced the name right, Sturge-Weber syndrome. Is there any way you can tell whether the port wine stain is going to be problematic with the more serious condition? And I have a couple of other questions about it, too.
Well, for that condition, I would, have to defer to the pediatrician to see if there's any physical abnormalities on examination of the infant. And then certainly a pediatric dermatologist would probably be the best person to see for that. But there are a lot of people who have port wine stains that are perfectly healthy.
No complications.
From just a regular port wine stain?
Yeah.
No, no.
Do you have a percentage in mind?
I'm sorry, I don't.
Okay. Would you be able to talk about some of the... I tuned in late, and I know about sunscreen has been discussed and poison ivy. Are there any other conditions that would complicate if you had either of those conditions? Should the parents put sunscreen on every time they go out?
I'm not sure. So you're referring
you
to the?
On,
are you talking
the child?
About the child with a port wine stain, or are you talking about people in general?
The child is. Does he have any special sensitivity to sun rays?
Not that I'm aware of.
Or poison ivy, or anything that I just don't happen to come up with.
Well. A high percentage of people get poison ivy, but I don't think that would have anything to do with his underlying vascular formation.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any last thing that you might say about, we've talked about, a couple of very summary things, talked about poison ivy, talked about sun exposure, insect bites. Anything in particular that you can tell people about, you know, what to do with them that can make them, once you've been bitten, that can make it a little bit easier to live with?
Well, take Benadryl for the itch. Ice packs, Bactine spray has lidocaine in it, which is a topical anesthetic. You can get over-the-counter hydrocortisone. You can use that. There is a product that a lot of people use on I'm blanking on the name now. But it's like a fingernail polish that they put on insect bites. When you get chigger ease.
Oh, so that it doesn't get, well, you don't have that tendency to rub it and get it even more irritated.
Right.
Okay.
But if it's really bad, sometimes you need to go and get a prescription cortisone gel for it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're at the point here where we're going to have to stop. My apologies. We're just coming to the end of the time. Again, if you have real specific questions, it's probably a good thing to see if you have a family practice doctor, you can see them. It's always good. You have questions about over-the-counter medications, you can always ask your pharmacist or about the medications that you're taking. Any last sort of thing you'd like to leave for folks other than wear your hats, wear your sunscreen, wear your protective clothes?
Just two things. Do not believe that by using sunscreens that you will not get enough vitamin D. The population in this area, for the most part, could very well be vitamin D deficient, and it's much easier to just use vitamin D3 capsules, 1,000 to 2,000 units daily. That's very easy, and that will give you all the vitamin D you need without going out in the sun. And secondly, do not go to the tanning beds. There has been several recent issues about the relationship between tanning beds and melanoma, and the most common cancer in young women is melanoma, and there appears to be a statistical significance with tanning bed use.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Elizabeth Small. She's a dermatologist from Carlin Urbana. We appreciate it.